There we go. If I can't move, I can't teach. All right. So I was asked to speak on the topic, godly wisdom versus worldly wisdom. Let's go to Colossians 2, 16 through 20. Now, if you think about that topic, you're probably thinking to talk about, you know, avoiding this and avoiding that and don't go to this and not having these kinds of thoughts. I'm going to take a bit of a different take on that than maybe possibly you had in mind. All right, go eat popcorn. Is that what you go for? Or is it General Electric Power Company? Which do you go for? Go eat popcorn. Okay, got it. Now, the subject of the book of Colossians is basically salvation by works or salvation by grace. And let me see if you've been going to church for a while, most of you. So which is it, salvation by works or by grace? All right, good. I'm glad you know that. I'm glad you got that little fact down. All right, let's read a passage. When they gave me this one to teach on, I thought, what's this have to do with teen camp? But then I thought about it. I realized it has a lot to do with teen camp. So, Colossians 2, 16 through 19. Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. Now, do you guys struggle with the new moon celebration issue in your school? Is that something that you really, you know, it really cause a lot of problems for you? You see why at first I thought this is an interesting passage. All right. They're a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ. And somebody wrote a book called From Shadow to Reality. You might have heard of that book. There's copies of it over there. All right. Do not let anyone delight in false humility, in the worship of angels, disqualify you for the prize. Such a person goes into great detail about what he has seen, and his unspiritual mind puffs him up with idle notions. He's lost connection with the head, from whom the whole body is supported and held together by its ligaments, and sinews grows as God causes it to grow. I'm going to continue through the end of the chapter. Since you died with Christ to the basic principles of this world, as though you still belong to it, do not submit to its rules. Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. Now, I thought Christianity was about rules. Actually, I didn't, but I'm thinking for you, all right? I mean, yesterday at the beginning of camp, you had a whole list of
rules.
So it's tempting to think that camp is about
rules.
But if you've been around, you realize it's a bit more than that, right? It goes a little bit deeper. Yeah. And what's interesting, he tells us, is if you live your life according to rules, it doesn't help. In fact, it makes you more ungodly. Now, are there any rules in Christianity? Yeah. But if we want to talk about godly wisdom versus worldly wisdom, I think it has almost nothing to do with the rules. And that's what I want to talk about. Let me finish this passage. Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. These are destined to perish with use because they're based on human commands and teachings. Such regulations, indeed, have an appearance of wisdom with their self-imposed worship, their false humility, their harsh treatment of the body, but they lack any value in restraining sensual indulgences. So rules do not create inner depth with God. Now, we need rules. All right, need rules at camp. There's a few rules in the Bible. There's a few of them out there. And we're certainly not going to blow off the rules, but to me, worldly wisdom versus godly wisdom doesn't have anything to do with the rules. Here's how I see it. Worldly wisdom is being spiritual according to rules. And godly wisdom is being spiritual according to principles. And really, the Old Testament had a lot more rules than the New Testament. Not that there are no rules in the New Testament. I'm saying there aren't. There are. But, you know, that was a shadow. Right? That's what he says in that passage. That rules, basically the way it worked in the Old Testament, it said it in Leviticus, those who do these things will live by them. Now, what was the problem with living by doing those things?
What about
Okay, that's a good point. The problem is nobody could do those things. You know, if it had to do with rules, you're toast already. I think you broke a few of them already, and you can't undo the fact that you broke the rules by following the rest of the time. You know what I'm saying? That was the shadow. The reality is principles. The principle of loving one another. The principle of being aware of the conscience of other people. So you have the dress code rule, and if you break it, I guess they'll enforce it. But how about loving people enough to let their conscience guide how you behave? The principle. Worldly wisdom is looking right. And, I've never been a teen in the church. I was baptized at 23. So to some extent, I'll be honest with you, I can't relate. I help, have any of you read Josh Quinn's book on, Kingdom Kid? It's worth reading. I helped him a little bit writing that book, and it kind of helped me relate at least a little bit. But if I understand it correctly, tell me if I'm wrong, there's a big temptation for, in quotes, Kingdom Kids, to be more concerned about appearing to be right than about being right. Why? Well, what's it say in 1 Samuel 16? What did Samuel say to David's father? The world looks at the outward appearance, and God looks at the heart. Now, why does the world look at the outward appearance? Well, because that's all we can look at. You know, that's all we can see. So I want to talk about that. That's what I want to talk about this morning. So worldly wisdom is about the outside, and godly wisdom is about the inside. 2 Corinthians 10:4. Let's go there quickly. We're going to spend our time, by the way, in Hebrews 11. That's where our lesson is going to come from. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 4. This is one of my favorite little passages. I'm going to actually back up a little bit. It's talking about godly versus worldly wisdom here. Verse 1. By the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I appeal to you, I, Paul, who am timid when face to face with you, but bold when away. I beg you that when I come, I may not have to be as bold as I expect to be towards some people who think that we live by the standards of this world. There were some people in the church in Corinth who had some worldly thinking. Now, you can read that, but there's all kinds of worldly thinking going on in that church. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Now, let's go to Hebrews 11. Because I believe the opposite of worldly wisdom is faith. I believe the opposite of worldly wisdom, the opposite of looking on the outside, is looking on the inside. Hebrews 11, 1 through 3. Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Look at that. Faith is being sure of what you hope for, and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed out of God's command, so that what is seen was not made from what is visible. You know what? Every single thing that is important is invisible. Think about it. Every single thing that is important is invisible. Now, what do we tend to see? This is an easy question, all right? If this was a quiz question, you'd be feeling pretty good. What do we tend to see, the visible or the invisible? Right. That's worldly wisdom. Worldly wisdom involves the things that you can see. And godly wisdom involves the things you cannot see. And everything that's important cannot be seen. If you pay attention to the news, does it look like God's in control? Seriously, what's been happening in Nice? What's been happening in Turkey? What happened just yesterday in Baton Rouge? If you look at the news, it just sure doesn't look like God's in control. Now, if you look at your body, does it look like I'm getting younger or older?
Younger.
Yeah, thank you very much. And what do you think is going to be the eventual outcome for this body that I happen to be using right now? It's going to decay and rot, and you know the molecules are going to go back somewhere else. If we look at the outward appearance, everything that's important can't be seen. He says something interesting here. He says, by faith we understand the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made from things that are visible. All right, and the sort of cool thing is, as a scientist, I go, that's right, actually, that's true. The Bible said it a long time ago. And then about 50 years ago, scientists discovered, you know, the Big Bang thing. You know, it's actually true. Everything that can be seen was made from things that are not seen. Therefore, they should believe in God. Hello, you know, but never mind that. What's his point? The point is, everything that can be seen was made from something that is not seen. So what's greater? What's more important? The things that are not seen. You know what? In order to have worldly wisdom, you have to deny your senses. Your senses tell you one thing, and the Bible tells you something else. Now, I do a fair amount of Christian evidence things, and I did a sort of Christian evidence thing last night. And that's pretty good. It's really nice to realize you have facts, you have information, you have undeniable facts that to base your faith on. But in the end, faith doesn't involve those things. Your faith does not involve that information from last night. Your faith involves things you can't see. That's something you can see. What you can't see is that when you're praying, God is listening. What you can't see is that if you trust Him fully with your life, His future, your future will be in His hands. If you reject what the world calls greatness and stake your life on God, you cannot see the result of that. In fact, if you could see the result, it wouldn't be faith. And you know, I don't know about you, but I want to have stuff I can see. I want to have a plan. You know, I've got a job, and I want a certain amount of money to go aside into this account. You don't care about this stuff. Mike does, but that's because he's old like me. And Mike can see that thing, that 401k, because he can kind of project out, okay, I want to retire. All right. You know, that's fine. But that faith involves things that you cannot see. Faith involves trusting God. In fact, the crazier it is, the better it is. But young people like that. That part's cool. All right. That part's really cool. You know, faith requires we deny our senses. Do you know that success is the enemy of faith? Now, how many here want to be successful in their Christian life? I do. But don't rely on that. I want to help somebody become a Christian. But if your faith is based on the awesomeness of helping somebody become a Christian, that's the fault. That's worldly thinking. That sounds like spiritual thinking, doesn't it? You know, it's going to start this great program. And I'm not saying that's not spiritual, but that's worldly thinking if taken to its too strong an extent. You know, it says, this is what the men and women of old were commended for. What were they commended for? They looked at the things the world has to offer and they said, you can keep that stuff. We're going to walk by faith. And then he goes through some pretty cool examples of people who walk by faith. I'm going to do a little bit of skipping. Actually, I'm going to start with an example outside of the book of Hebrews. All right, I'm going to start with Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, can I assume you know the story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in that big statue? I'll tell you a little bit of the details. So here are three teenagers. I would say probably the average age in this room is higher than the age of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, probably. They're in their teens, certainly. All right. And here's the situation. This massive stage, a 90-foot-tall gold-covered statue, tens of thousands of people, and on the stage, the most powerful man in the world. And they say, when we blow the flute and the lyres and the harps and all that sort of stuff, you bow down to that statue. Now, would you have bowed down to that statue? Now, maybe be cautious in answering that question. I like to think I know the answer, but here's my point. It wasn't looking too good. From a worldly perspective, it's not looking too good. Bad idea. Bad idea to stand out and be different. What a great example for what you guys have to deal with that we adult Christians don't have to deal with. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego with the 90-foot statue and the big high stage and the most powerful man in the world and the fiery furnace, that's kind of like being a Christian in high school, I think, a little bit. I think so, anyway. And maybe it's a little over the top. But, you know, it looked like kind of a bad idea to stand out like that. But, you know, they made all those instruments sound, and they blew the horns and all the things, and tens of thousands bowed, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they stood up for God. How's that living by faith? You know, they didn't have a church. They didn't have a discipler. They didn't have parents. All right? And by the way, they didn't have Jesus or, you know, the New Testament. And, you know, and after that happened, Nebuchadnezzar, he was ticked, man. He was angry. He threw a temper tantrum. He couldn't believe it. Who are those pipsqueaks? Those teenagers? What are they doing? He said, bring them up here. So imagine Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, teenagers, against the most powerful man in the world. Let's read that. That's Daniel 3. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool stuff. Verse 13. Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve by gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you're ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what god will be able to rescue from my hand?" Now there's a reason that Nebuchadnezzar feels confident. But after all, he does have all the soldiers there in the fiery furnace. But think about it. According to outward wisdom, he had already defeated the Jews. His God had beaten their God. Where were the items from the temple in Jerusalem? They were sitting in his treasury. From a worldly perspective, they had lost already. And you might be tempted to feel that way at times. That's why, in order to be faithful to God, you have to deny your senses. You have to allow God to tell you what's true. That's tough to do. So he says, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I'll give you one more chance, all right? I'll give you one more chance." I love their answer. I love their answer. They said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, most powerful man in the entire world, who conquered our country and took us as captives, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up." Did they expect to be saved from the flames? I don't think so. There's no precedent. So I really respect Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Because they said, God can save us. And we can say to our friends in school, "Hey, God's going to work it out for me, but you know what? Even if he doesn't, I'm still going to obey God." I mean, you know, their faith was sufficient that even if God didn't work it out, even if God didn't get them into the school they wanted, even if God didn't get them a husband or a wife or eventually. Even if God didn't cure them of that disease that was going to mess up their ability to be healthy for the rest of their life, even if he doesn't solve my problem, because remember, faith involves things you can't see. You can see a marriage partner. You can see an acceptance letter to the university. You can see those things. But what you can't see is faith. And you can't see God for that matter. So let's go back to Hebrews 11. I'm just going to look at a few of these heroes of the faith. These heroes are pretty awesomely heroic. I'm going to skip Enoch and Abel. I normally would cover those, but for the sake of time, I'm going to skip straight down to our buddy Noah. Verse 7 of Hebrews 11. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. Now notice this. It says, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen. That's his point. Throughout this chapter, he keeps saying it involves things you can't see. So God comes to Noah and he says, Noah, I want you to build an ark. And Noah says, well, what's an ark? Well, it's a boat. People from Canada know all about that. What's a boat? Well, it's a thing that you make to float on the water when there's all this water. What water? Well, the flood. What flood? What's a flood? Well, a flood is when it rains, because he lived kind of more or less desert, you know. It rains and rains, and all this water comes down, and it comes. All right, fine. All right, so flood. Never seen one. All right, fine. So I needed to build a boat. All right, fine. How big a boat? 300 feet long. 300-foot-long boat, what for? For the animals. What animals? The ones that are going to come. All right. Why are they going to come? I'm going to make them come. All right. So when are they going to come? 100 years from now. Noah built the ark. That's faith. Nobody had ever seen a flood. Certainly nobody had ever seen animals coming from hundreds of miles around, kind of walking into the boat there. I would have liked to have been there when Noah went home and talked to his wife. He says, hey, Noah's wife. I assume she had a name, but that's, you know, Noah. Hey, Noah's wife. He said, you know, God talked to me. And he told me to build an ark. She says, all right, Noah, what's an ark? Well, it's a boat. It's a boat. What do you use a boat for? I never saw a boat. A boat is a thing like when there's all this water. Well, what water are you talking about? Well, it's going to be this flood. She says, what's a flood? I never saw a flood. It's going to be all this water. It's going to rain for days and days and days. All right, fine, cool. So we'll make a little boat. Tell me about that boat. Well, it's going to be, 300 feet long. Noah, why do we need such a big boat? Well, because of the animals. Now, wait a minute. Who told you about this? God. Which God? The one you can't see. and Noah built the ark. And then he started building the ark, and his neighbor said, Noah, what are you doing? I'm building an ark. How do you think his fellow classmates, using the analogy, how do you think his fellow classmates in school felt about this craziness of going to Bible talk all the time and actually being different and going to a different prom and how do you think they felt about Noah? Noah, you're crazy. What are you talking about? What animals? You know that Noah preached for 100 years. He preached righteousness for 100 years. How many converts did he have? In the first 100 years, how many converts did he have? Zero. Noah had faith. He believed in things that aren't seen. And what's cool, Although during his lifetime, Noah had essentially no converts, because of his faith, how many have come to know God? Thousands, tens of thousands. But it was after he died. One of the points of Hebrews is, all these men and women of faith didn't receive the promise. But we've received the promise. Surely we can walk by faith. And then there's Abraham. Verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to a city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. By faith, Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sands on the seashore. Now this is a pretty amazing story. God says to Abraham, pack up your stuff and leave. And Abraham says, well, all right, where am I going? And God says, I'm not going to tell you. You just need to pack up and leave. And after you leave, just leave, and then I'll tell you where you're going, but only after you leave. You know what? That's what it's like to become a Christian. In fact, in Romans 4:16, it says, Abraham is the father of all who obey and who believe and are saved by faith. Because for all of us, in order to become a Christian, we have to leave everything behind. And we don't really know what we have in store. You know, in fact, if you knew where you were going, then where would the faith be? So really, I believe if you want to walk by faith, if you want to have godly wisdom as opposed to worldly wisdom, you need to follow Abraham out of the city of Ur. Abraham was set up. From the worldly perspective, he had everything. He had wealth. He lived in the greatest city in the world at that time. He had family. But God said, you need to leave that stuff behind. You know, and by faith, Abraham did that. I believe the greatest people of faith in the entire Bible are Noah, Abraham, and Mary. Talk about believing in things that have not yet been seen. What about Mary? Wow. And would you have liked to have been there when she explained this to Joseph? You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit like Noah explaining it to his wife. You know what I'm saying? So Abraham goes home and he says to Sarah, Sarah, pack our things. We're going. Sarah, oh, a vacation. Awesome. No, not a vacation. We're just going. When are we coming back? Never. That's the Christian life. That's walking by faith. You're never coming back to the world. Not ever. All right? So she says, all right, Abraham, all right, where are we going? I don't know. Well, then why are we going? Because God told me. Which God? The one you can't see. By faith, Abraham left Ur. That is godly thinking. Worldly thinking says, you got to be kidding me. You got everything you need. What are you looking for? He's looking for the promise. And then God said to Abraham, you know what? You're going to have a kid. Yeah, you're 90-something years old. But you're going to have a kid. And not only are you going to have a kid, that kid is going to be the father of many nations. Your descendants are going to be like the sands on the seashore and the stars in the sky. And I think Abraham, you know, 90, let's say 95 years old. Yeah. Still got it. But he looks at Sarah. I don't know, 87 years old. She never had any kids. She was barren. And I think menopause was kind of pretty far in the past for her. You know, 30, 35 years. You know, Abraham believed in something that had never been seen. Are you ready for the Christian adventure? It's going to be an adventure. You know, I love it. I love it. I love being in situations where I'm totally outside of control. If I had 3 hours, I could tell you some of the stories of me traveling around the world and ending up in a place where I have no phone number, I have no information, I have no contact, there's nobody there, I have no way to reach anybody, and you know, and I'm talking to somebody at the airport, I say, you know, it's cool, this is going to work out, and then people look at me like, you know, who is this guy? I'm just walking by faith. And I love it! You know, if everything's set up for you, where's the faith in that? Are you ready for the Christian adventure? Abraham literally walked by faith. And he walked by faith in the promised land, and yet he never received the promise. And we've received the promise. He didn't exactly have the Holy Spirit living in him, did he? How about all those messianic prophecies from last night? Did he have any of those to work with? What did he have to work with? Faith. But then let's continue on. Verse 17. I'm going to come back to the verse 13 later. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. I think I mentioned about Abraham last night at least a little bit, didn't I? I think I did, yeah. But this is pretty amazing, because God promised. You know, in Romans 4, it says, Abraham believed. And it was reckoned to him as righteousness. What did Abraham believe? He believed if God said it, it's true. That's what he believed. He believed that God's promises, all of them, would be true. That God will fulfill his promises. All right? It's like God said, I promise, I swear, right? And so the promise was descendants like the grains of sand and the stars of the sky. But the command was, kill your son. And by faith, Abraham killed. Well, he didn't kill him, but he was ready to. He held the knife up and God said, no. And notice what it says here. He reasoned. Faith does not mean you stop thinking. You might be tempted to think that. If I'm going to have faith in God, that means I need to stop using my reasoning. I need to act irrationally. That is false. That's a lie. You don't stop thinking when you're walking by faith. Your thinking is involved in that. You need to think about how God might work it out, but he may not work it out that way, but you act anyway. So Abraham reasoned. He's like, I don't know, I can't explain it. All I know is, there's the promise and the command. They can't contradict because that's God. So he was prepared to kill his own son. If you want to walk by faith, you need to walk out of Ur. If you're a disciple, you already did. If you're not yet, well, think about it. But you know what? If you want to walk by faith, not only do you have to walk out of Ur, you have to walk to Mount Moriah. Mount Moriah is the place where the awesome things that God gave you, He takes them away from you. All right? And sometime in your Christian walk, that's going to happen to you. Something that you value dearly that God gave to you, He's going to take it away. Will you walk by faith? I believe God will replace that with something even greater. But you know what? I can't see it. And if you could see it, it wouldn't be faith. And then there's Moses. Verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt. There's a common theme. Faith involves leaving something. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. There's Pharaoh. Very visible. God can't be seen. By faith, he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of blood, so the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. Moses had it made, folks. He had the awesomest clothes. Is that a word? Awesomest? It's a word right now. He had the best food. He was the adopted son of the king of the stinking strongest country in the whole world right then. God had given him some pretty amazing stuff. The girls, he could have a date with anybody he wanted to. What do you think? All right? He was the popular guy in high school. He was the star of the football team. And all his fellow students said, he's amazing. You know what? He walked out of the palace. He flat walked out of the palace. And he lived amongst a bunch of slaves. Because he believed that God was going to use him to do great things. You know what? I don't think God's going to ask you to live amongst a bunch of slaves. Well, in a sense, yes, he will. Because everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Do you know what? In your high school, you're walking around with a whole bunch of slaves. So you know what you need to do? You need to hang out with the disciples, you know, and help people get out of slavery. And that's what Moses did. By faith, he saved the entire nation of Israel from slavery. You're not going to save your entire high school, all right? It's not going to work out that way. But if you walk by faith, you're going to pull a few of them out of slavery. And then I love the thing with Joshua. Where's that? It's down in verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell. You know, God comes to Joshua. He says, hey, Joshua, you're going to take Jericho. Joshua's there. Yeah, we're going to take Jericho. That's awesome. All right. So what's the battle plan? Well, here's the battle plan. You're going to go out in the middle of the day in the hot sun. I was there a couple summers ago. It's like 120 degrees there during the day. You're going to go around and you're going to walk around the city. And then you're going to blow your trumpets. I like to think Joshua said, God, now what's the real actual battle plan? You know, tell me the real battle plan. No, I'm serious. Because, you know, that's how you're going to take the city. And Joshua went back to Israel. He says, I've got great news, guys. God told me we're going to take this city. And they're yes, that is awesome. All right. And Joshua says, and now here's the battle plan. Line up and just start walking. You're just going to walk around the city. And you're going to blow the trumpets and the walls are going to fall. All right, Joshua. Because, you know, Joshua had been a general. He knew battle tactics. You know what? Literally, they walked by faith around that city. Literally. What do you think the people in the city of Jericho thought about these crazy Jews walking around the city? Probably kind of what they think about you as a disciple of Jesus. You know what I'm saying? You just got to deal with it. They thought they were crazy. You know, Noah's friends thought he was crazy until it started raining. You know, when the floods came up and the door shut, who was laughing at who? When the walls of Jericho came down, who was laughing at who? But you know, you can't see it. You can't see heaven. But the same Jesus who said he's the resurrection and the life and who raised Lazarus from the dead told us that in his Father's house there are many mansions. You know, I'm going to go back to verse 13. I'm almost done here. And I want you to hold on to this section, verse 13 through 16. Because this is what godly wisdom is about. It's about seeing the unseen things. It says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted they were aliens and strangers in their high schools. Get it? People who say such things show that they're looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one, one that can't be seen. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for as He prepared a city for them. Abraham lived in tents for the rest of his life, wandering from place to place with nowhere in particular to live. Ur was sitting there the whole time. He could have gone back any time he wanted to. But you know what? He accepted that he was a bit different. How many of you want to fit in? Raise your hand if you want to fit in. All right, the rest of you are lying. All right, let's do that again. How many of you want to fit in? I want to fit in. Come on. You know, fortunately, in a lot of things we can fit in. Mostly we can listen to the same music, all right? Mostly we can wear the same clothes. We can root for the same teams. And, you know, we can eat the same food. That's good. But you know what? If your goal is to fit in, it's not going to work out that way because you're going to be like an alien and a stranger in certain ways. And these people admitted that. But here's the cool thing. I want to leave this thought with you. It says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. That's it. You want to go to heaven? Let me tell you how it works. Just keep walking by faith. If the day you die, you're walking by faith, you're going to walk straight into the promised land forever. Now, I hope your faith walk is amazing. I hope it's fantastically victorious. But you know what? Even if it's not, even if you just barely keep walking, if you keep walking by faith, then the day you die, you're going to be welcomed into God's eternal blessing. He said, these people they didn't receive it. They saw it only from a distance. We have the prophecies fulfilled. We have Jesus who was nailed to a cross. We have the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. Surely we can throw away worldly wisdom. Surely we can accept godly wisdom. Surely we can walk by faith. Thank you.